The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Reality, Professor Peter Eisen is on sabbatical, but will be back next fall. So I'm going to start this. What I thought I would do is just sort of give you guys a brief overview of our curriculum, maybe sort of go into some pointers just that over the years of being here, questions students have had, what order should I take these in, what non-IP courses are good, this kind of information for you guys. And then I thought I'd just open it up to questions, because I assume everyone has particular questions, and you're probably tired of these advisory sessions, especially as they start at 5 o'clock. So we'll try to... Then Josh can come in and if there's patent. Are there people here who are specifically interested in patent who have technical backgrounds? I know we've got a lot of you guys in the school. So Josh can really answer the real hardcore patent questions. I never do, never try to. But like what I did for you guys was I put together a list that I think is on. We have had over the years a program on intellectual property and the public interest. And what we did this year is we renamed it the Program on Information Justice. Hey, there's Sean.
You're
speaking
right.
Up. And this is our associate director of the program, Sean Flynn. And we renamed the program to more aptly describe what we think we're doing. And they have put together this wonderful list, and we sort of got a lasso and tried to figure out what courses would we at least nominally say were in our IP basket of courses. So just to go over them, okay, so basically, what do we have here? The intro course that's new this year, Professor Farland's intro to intellectual property. These are sort of what we call our foundation courses. Courses that if you go into IP, you think generally are good to have under your belt. And obviously, you have to make some choices because you also have to take your bar courses, your evidence, things like that. That was just the most haphazard way of handing these things out. Wasn't that stellarly not brilliant? It was this random array of people. So intellectual property. There is an intellectual property overview course, the last course listed there, that will be offered this summer, but will not be offered in the fall. So as for next academic year, pickings, it will not be in the mix. Copyright and trademark law foundation courses will be offered in the fall. And Professor Sarnoff will offer patent law in the spring. Basically, those are sort of the foundations. We think, you know, obviously you have interest in one area or the other. The one thing I will say in that is even if you don't think, a couple of hands went up about the patent law interest, even if you don't think you want to do that, you're a liberal arts major, no technical, no science background, think you want to do copyright, trademark, entertainment, law type of thing, Professor Farley and I, who are that way, always will say to people, take patent law, don't be scared of it. It's really sort of a foundational policy course. And if you find yourself at an IP firm, even as a non-technical sort, there are lots of opportunities in patent litigation, even if you can't be a prosecutor. And it's a great course to take. So I just put that little plug in there for patent law. Because over the years, we've had those questions. In terms of advanced IP courses, as you see on the list, we have a human rights and development course. I think that's Professor Flynn's course, Sean's course. And then we've got our international comparative courses, the copyright, the trademark, the patent. There's an IP management, sort of a practice-based course. international contracts, transfer IP rights, sort of the more upper level courses. And there are a lot of these. And I guess what I would say about these, or this is where you should really hone in on your interests. But I would say if you're going to devote credits, get the broad-based training on the foundation, and maybe even some of the supplementary courses over some of these very narrow specialty courses. Advanced copyright with Professor Kasunik this year will be teaching it again next spring. IP protection enforcement, property management. A lot of these courses here are taught by adjuncts, and a lot of them are very practically based as opposed to the theoretical underpinnings. Patent prosecution, and the last course on there is the IP clinic. And I don't know how many of you are interested in having a clinical experience when you're here. Generally, I teach in the IP clinic with Professor Sarnoff and Professor Yazzie. We've had it now for 6 years. We'll start our seventh year in the fall. Generally, we had not been able to take second years, so it's something to slot in there. It's a bunch of credits. It's 14 credits. It's 7 credits a semester. But there's a seminar component and then a large casework where you're representing real clients, and I can answer questions about that later. But that's a boatload of credits. And so what we always tell people is try to front load those basic courses because we like to see some prerequisites in the copyright, trademark, patent courses for that class so you can sort of get the ground running. But equally as important to some of these advanced courses are these courses that might grab your interest one way or another based on what you think you want to do. But Law and the Visual Arts is a seminar that Professor Farley has offered over the years. I don't know now that she's a dean that she will be able to offer that, since she has the elective that you guys are taking now in the spring. Entertainment law, sports law, information society, law and cyberspace, biotechnology, some of the specialty courses. Communications law, I teach that course and I try to do some IP overlap in that course. There's a telecommunications law course taught by an adjunct at the FCC. And this session was supposed to be about communications law, too. I don't know if anyone has a specific interest in that, but I can outline other courses in that area as well. And then these relevant, this last category, really important courses, media law, remedies. If you're going to practice in the DC area, you're going to do rulemaking, administrative law, First Amendment's interplay with IP issues is constant, something we see all the time. We represent in the clinic a lot of filmmakers, and the First Amendment is sort of, you know, the antithesis of the copyright, right? So the way those two interplay is really important, so it's a good course to have. Antitrust overlaps with IP, legislation, obviously, DC practice or state practice, lots of legislation in this area, federal courts, international trade, international business transaction. So this is sort of just this little helpful guide for you guys. In addition to the patent, taking the patent course, students often ask, what order should I take these in? And as common sense would probably dictate, the foundation courses first. If you want to take a summer course, the IP survey would be a good intro. But also, reason this list is helpful is to think about those courses that really are closely related to IP and the kind of things that you might come into practice. Because as you guys know, your clients don't walk in the door either in clinical experience or in a practice experience in the summer or after school as a trademark issue. They might have trademark issues, they might have some state law claims, they might have defamation issues where First Amendment law would have been helpful. So all these things, they might have a technology issue, so communications issues might be involved. All these courses are really helpful, especially those ones that are sort of, the admin laws, the Fed courts, the things you might not think of as necessarily related to IP, but they would be courses that we would recommend as a faculty that you might want to think about taking. Because I know it gets hard, and I know I talk to a lot of students who are trying to decide whether to do the 14-credit IP clinic, and even after all next year's two semesters of coursework. By the time you have your required ethics and prep pro, and you want to take evidence, and you want to maybe take a bar course, it starts in the ceilings coming down on you in terms of discretion. And there are a lot of courses listed on here. So it really, the selection starting from next fall, or from now, what we're doing the next couple of weeks, really sort of the chess game of when they're offered and what you want to try to get in.
I'm happy to open it up to some questions. I mean, I guess one of the perspectives that I try to give to students, it's a good time to be mapping out now what you want to do. I mean, I think law school is a good place to have a plan, execute the plan, make sure you get things that should be in your plan out. You don't want to just kind of surf through all your classes like you're in college, frankly, and the law is a place you want to graduate with some expertise. So if you're so that's one issue. I mean, I think people's plans will be different depending on which area you either know you want to go through. Experimentation can totally be part of the plan. I mean, you don't have to narrow it all down to one field, but you want to kind of narrow it down to your choices and take those choices during your first semester elective or your second year as soon as you can, so that you can spend some time in the second semester of your second year where you can change your courses. You know, you can make choices as you go through this and eliminate some things. But I would try to spend some time figuring out where your possible choices are if you still have some and start narrowing into that. That's one thing. Second thing is, so one aspect of experiential learning is the clinic. Other opportunities are externships. Externships are basically internships while you're at school, right?
for credit,
so you can get credit for an externship. I think experiential learning is one of the things that you have a comparative advantage of being in DC, especially if you're interested in IP stuff. Most of the big IP policy questions are done in DC. Depending on which area you're in, I would say try to get two types of experiential learning. One is I would try to work in the government agency that you think you'll be most trying to impact in your practice life, even if you don't want to be. So if you're a patent guy, go work at the PTO, like a copyright person, go work at the copyright office, or the international adjuncts of those things, or some government office that deals with those issues, but try to get some government experience, either at a summer or an externship or an internship or whatever. And those are good things to do your 2L year or your between your 1L and your 2L summer if you're still making some choices there. And then the other type of experiential learning experience I would recommend giving is more of an advocacy type experience, like being on the outside representing a client, trying to advocate to those organizations. It could be a different one. FCC for communications issues, a lot of students go there. Let's say, for instance, you know you want to do communications law. Try to get a job at the FCC for some period of time, either as an externship or a summer job, and then get a job either at a media firm or an NGO that does advocacy that files things in that organization. And then you've had the kind of two key experiences, being a judge-type policy experience and being an advocate type, making submissions to the decision maker experience. And they don't have to be to the same entity. I mean, you may think, gee, I'd either like to do copyright or communication law, so you could do the advocacy type experience with your copyright stuff and go work at the FCC for your communications law, widow things down that way. But I think it's very valuable to have those kind of inside-outside experiential learning experiences.
So we are the resources for you guys to talk about. I don't know how to make plans for this summer, but the first year summer is really a great chance to not necessarily for credit if you don't want to do that. When we do have externships in the curriculum, they are normally tied to an externship seminar. You'll see a course number for an externship seminar, and over the years, based on sort of our clinic experience, that it's really important not to just have these experiences. When Sean talks about experiential learning, meaning actually practicing as a student, it's not only important to do that, but it's important to spend a lot of time reflecting on it and thinking about it. And what we have done is, in the past, there just used to be be random externships, and people would take them and not really get anything meaningful out of it other than if they had a good supervisor at whatever agency they were at. And because if you do it for credit, it couldn't be at a law firm. You couldn't be getting paid. So they're generally government jobs, nonprofits. But what we did in the last, about 6-7 years ago, is we created through Ava Sanders, who runs the externship program, this externship seminar that you take along with it. So you're paired with people maybe who are all working in government, and you have this seminar, and there's a strong requirement that you do the two. If you're doing it for credit during the semester, I think even during the summer, you do it with the externship component to try to make the experience more meaningful. And, you know, in those seminars, you talk about the workplace. In addition to the substance of what you're doing, you talk about, you know, the supervisor who's not giving you the time of day. So it gives students a more even experience than, you know, leaving it up to the fate of who you happen to work for. Because they're great managers, and they're credit managers. And you can't, you know, you guys know from your work experience, you can't predict who you're going to get. But that seminar is an attempt to sort of level the playing field a little bit. And the other thing is, we are the resources to talk to about places like this. You know, I talk to a lot of students about the FCC, going to work on Capitol Hill. I have a list in my office of public interest-oriented IP placements where students have gone over the years that have been, you know, and by now we have a sense of where people are good supervisors and where they're not, what are good placements and what are not. So I'm going to try to convey that to Ava Sanders as well. So if you're interested this summer, feel free to contact any one of us to talk about those. Trademark office takes interns, which is if you're going to file trademark registrations, it's great to figure out what the examiners do in the process. Copyright office is a little less opportunity for interns there. SCC, there's great opportunity. I don't know, in the patent context, Josh could probably answer that more because the patent examiners, I don't know how the interns are used. But we can talk to you if you have a special area that you're interested in. We can definitely, you know, try to help you get those, because those are door-opening opportunities for sure. The first summer is a good time to do that. So Josh is going to come in about 5 or 10 minutes to add his 2 cents to the. Should we start with
questions? I was just wondering, you said that intellectual property policy and law is only offered this summer, but interest with intellectual property is also offered. Should we be taking both since they're both listed, or is one more beneficial than the other?
Well, introduction to intellectual property is the elective for first years.
That it's titled under the summer as that as well. I don't know.
You mean the course that's offered this summer is called Introduction to Intellectual Property?
Yeah.
That is the same as the last course. Okay. It's an adjunct professor who teaches it, and I think he did not change the title. When Professor Farley taught it, she called it Intellectual Property Policy and Law. Okay. That's just a catalog error that actually we should probably correct. But an adjunct professor from Israel teaches that course in the summer. And I think you're right. He does call it Introduction to Intellectual Property. So that would be an option as a, you know, as a.
But not if you're not if you're in the 1L. Are you in the 1L class right now? Okay. Yeah. If you're in the 1L, I want to take. Don't take out of 2
spirits. Yeah. Don't duplicate. You guys don't have enough time to do duplication.
Will there be an intro type course offered during the school year next year, or is it just summer?
I do not believe so. We talked long and hard about that, and what happened over the years. But I've been here. I'll be starting 7 years in the fall. I will. Josh comes in, and we talked about this a lot. And a lot of students were taking this intro course instead of one of the 3, and our preference would be, and that's why we like it in the first year as a little two credits, right? As a little 2-credit introduction, because it's so, as a 3-credit course to cover those 3 areas, it's almost so little of each. You know what I'm saying? That it's almost better, since the sort of the general policies and some of the theoretical stuff you'll be learning is almost better to learn in the context of an in-depth copyright course, for example, than a little less. So we were trying to veer away from it, so it's not being taught during the year. As far as I know, it's not listed for the fall.
So do you think we'd be fine taking one of the, like, say, the copyright without the intro?
Absolutely. I mean, now that the intro is sort of not available, I mean, without taking it this spring?
Yeah.
Absolutely. They're introductory courses. Yeah, no, you should do any three of those, any of these. It would be, and that should, I would like to think you'd take two or three of them if you could.
Do you feel like the elective for the 1L is a sufficient foundational course for the advanced courses, or do you recommend us to take the copyright or the trademark or the patent foundational courses before looking at, I guess, the advanced courses?
Yeah, I mean, we have had situations where students have not had the opportunity to take copyright, and they wanted to take advanced copyright, and that has happened, so I would think that you'd be perfectly... As little as the two-credit course has exposed you maybe to one of the three, you could do that, but I would say if your schedule permits, you guys know your course better than I do, and I have talked to Professor Farley a little bit about this, and I think she would advocate taking one of the three. It shouldn't supplant, her course shouldn't supplant any one of the three foundational courses. That's the better way to answer the question.
You might also look at the particular, I think it kind of depends a little bit on the particular class. So definitely for my class, Advanced Issues in IP, Human Rights and Development, nothing beyond just the introductory survey class. That would be completely adequate to think to find in that class. And I don't know about each one of these. I would read the description on what it kind of requires and how far along it seems like the description is as far as your basic understanding.
But the three foundational courses are rich enough that, you will be learning a lot of new stuff even though you've taken this selective.
Is our schedule tight and we have to pick between copy and trademark in the fall past spring, right?
Oh, okay, you're right.
So if we
I was just jumping on that. Just in patent.
But if we had to pick between copy and trademark and we are looking to do clinic third year, is there a preference for clinic as to which we would be taking our 2L year and which we would be taking at the same time as clinic?
No, because we do a lot of each of those, and we look at either of those.
Should we really try and fit in both on our 2-year, 2L year?
You mean kind of
trademark and copy? They're both fall courses.
Yeah, no, and that's you're going to only be able to take one of them.
Okay.
Right? If you take patent in the spring, that's like a nice diet. If you take two out of the three, that's a great diet for clinic. If you take one of them, that's pretty good. They're different courses, and if you have the elective, you have sort of a little bit of maybe a feel for which you would, maybe since you've had Professor Farley, you want to try copyright to take another faculty member, but, they're two solid, great courses.
Just along those lines, just to clarify then, if we have a tight schedule, should we, and we haven't taken an intro course, could we just go straight to copyright in the summer then?
Absolutely. You guys are the first year we've ever had this intro course, so copyright, trademark, patent have always been taken, by nobody with anything more than property and contracts and torts and common law. Legal rights and research. But did you like having the elective? Was that a nice feeling? This sort of the dictated schedule? But I sort of get the sense from students it's been a good...
If you made the right choice.
Well, it's good to know what you don't want to do. Or what you don't want to take. But, that's going to be throughout the curriculum, right?
I guess regarding the supplemental courses, how often are these courses offered? Because I think a lot of them were taught by adjuncts or whatnot. Can we say that within the next four terms that we'll be here or six or whatever that like I guess a particular one that we find really interesting will be offered, or are these just courses that have been offered in the past?
Yes, as I look at this list, I mean, I offer communications law every fall, telecom law is offered every fall, e-commerce law and drafting is offered every spring, law and cyberspace, this is going to be offered next spring. I think sports law, entertainment law, I've seen these offered every year.
Okay.
As even though some of them are adjuncts, e-commerce is not an adjunct, communications law is not an adjunct. Law and visual arts. Now that's Professor Farley, so I don't know when she'll be able to offer that again. And then all the relevant courses are clearly offered. Some of them offer both semesters, so there's lots of opportunity for, let's say, admin law, for example. Federal courts, I think, is offered both semesters. So yeah, now in your cycle, if things look interesting to you, you will be, you know, whether the, I don't know, this crazy lottery, getting into classes is a whole different ballgame. But the what do we say, the cable legend regulations, call it homes passed. Whether or not you decide to subscribe, you will be passed by these courses, whether or not you can actually take them is another thing, but they will be in your lifetime here. And we hope you'll be able to take them.
Switching over to more communications based, obviously there's a lot on here. Is there anything that's not on the sheet that you recommend?
Yeah, for people interested, and I haven't really gone into that, for people interested in communications law, just to sort of run down the courses, because it sort of is the foundation course there is the communications law course, because it's taught as a survey course with a theme of convergence. Because telephone companies are now providing cable. Everything used to be regulated up until, about 10 years ago, everything was regulated in these silos. Broadcast law, cable law, telephone law, and wireless, we even knew them, but it was all regulated. And now, as you see, just in the marketplace, everyone's getting into each other's business after the 1996 Telecom Act, which deregulated everything. So that course is taught sort of general themes and policies throughout all of the service areas. Then, like the IP courses, then there's specialty courses, there's telecom, which is basically common carrier law. And this summer, for the first time, we'll have an international communications course taught, which is on the schedule. I think it's on Monday nights. And we're hoping, I think, to have a wireless course taught next year sometime on wireless communications issues. Then Professor Verona has a media law course that sort of looks at the mass media stuff. First Amendment, obviously, very important. Administrative law, hugely important if you're going to practice in front of the FCC. Antitrust comes into play. The Department of Justice does a lot of communications work. Similarly, legislation would be important. Cyber law. Now, just as all the service providers are converging, I think also you're seeing even patent, trademark, copyright, there's some convergence going on there. You know, as we see in the clinic, we have clients that come in, you think they're going to be copyright, but they also maybe have a business method patent. So we're seeing convergence of sort of all these areas. In the old days, you just sort of practice one thing, and you had your specialists. And now people are realizing they have to be somewhat more generalist to help the multi-faceted clients that come to the door. And there again, in the communications law area, I would say that experience sort of in the decision-making bodies of either the SBC or a Hill committee would be hugely valuable to sort of see how decisions are made before you actually practice before them, get the inside baseball.
I was just wondering, I saw in the docket that you're having clinic dean fellows.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, are they just, it seemed to imply that it's just role-playing that they're doing. Is there anything, are they doing in research and like other things?
The clinic dean fellows are generally, we try to hire people for the summer. And in the summer, it's research and writing. And then in the year, we have them help us out playing clients in our simulation that goes through the entire year, being the clients that the students interview, that the students represent in court. And there occasionally is as well some research that comes in depending upon, you know, we don't have the Dean's Fellows do the clinic student work because they're really responsible for that whole basket of issues. But if there are larger law reform projects that we might be working on, or assistance with conferences, things like this, the Dean's Fellows have helped out on that in the past. But the preference there would be that someone could commit some degree of hours in the summer and also go through the academic year.
And also, it didn't say how many hours for both the summer and during the year that they generally...
Yeah, we try to be pretty flexible because we know people want part-time experiences or other experiences in the summer as well. So we've done everything from 10 to 20 per week, depending. We try to be flexible with what the students need.
And same during the year?
Or? During the year, it's even less because we know students are busy, and a lot of students, what they do, they do like 10 hours at the Dean's Fellow for us. Then they'll do 10 hours per professor to have a full, if they want that many hours, but some students are busy with journals or other, recorded other things in the 10 is.
We could do like 5 or just however.
Yeah, we've cut it a lot of ways, and we try to sort of, this, based on what the students need for their schedule, because I know it gets busy. But the role playing, the strange thing about the Dean's Fellow role playing is sometimes it's a lot of hours. One week, let's say we have a trial in our simulation, and then maybe there'll be 3 weeks where you really don't do anything. So it's in total a bunch of hours, but it's not the classic sort of 10 hours a week kind of feeling.
And Pidgett hires Dean's Fellows both in the, we'll be hiring some in the summer, probably a couple, and then also during the year to do research topics. Most of it is on, well, there's a couple different kinds. One is on basic kind of program building, which could be helping to do conferences and web page stuff and getting research up on the web and stuff like that. And then we have programmatic areas where we do research on specific areas. Right now, access to medicine stuff is pretty hot, so looking for people to do work both on state legislation on access to medicines and interface with IP, but also kind of constitutional law. And some trade work, so interplays between international trade and access to medicine stuff, both in access to medicine developing countries and also the interplay between U.S. and U.S. trade agreements and state ability to regulate medicine. So those are a few areas where we're constantly working in those areas, as some of you.
And we just email you with your resume.
You send your resume to me. We haven't actually formally advertised these yet. We're going to put something on the IP seminars blackboard. Put something in Docula and something on a web page. But yeah, you can just send me a resume if you're interested. And pretty similar thing. The hours are relatively flexible. It kind of depends, you know, when you're available, what you want to do. I know one student is approaching me. She's going to go abroad for this. Or she's in this room. Adrian?
Okay.
No,
she went to Texas.
Okay, she went to Texas. She was mentioning she's going away to Chile to do the study abroad thing and looking for something to do kind of in July or something like
that.
You know, those kind of things are possible with Pidgett research projects. Colleagues.
Yeah,
other research
a lot of
people
have done the Chile program or like Turkey, and it would fit their hours into those windows that they have. The other thing is faculty will be looking for Dean Fellow for their research too. Professor Yazzie, Professor Farley, Professor
Arnold.
Professor
Efras, I think. But none of the others have advertised yet. Will they put it on the docket, or will you just approach them if you want to find out?
They will usually put it in the docket. I guess it should get to be about that time. So we will do that.
I wouldn't be afraid of, I don't know, personal style, but I wouldn't be afraid of just approaching someone directly if there's someone you really want to work with. Just sending an email, letting them know what time you have, that you're interested in.
People do
that to me, and I encourage it. I'm very happy. I mean, these are all one else. So throughout your years here, if you're looking for something, you want to do something with Pidgett, just email me. And in fact, if you have a specific thing you want to do, like you're really interested in researching this project, and it seems to fit into something we're already doing, so we have a list of projects on our front page, it's much easier for me to raise money for you if you have something that you want to do, as opposed to, you know, Ishan, what are you doing? What should I work on? which I welcome those too. But if you have something specific you want to do, then you know I can approach the dean and say, gee, I have this great student who's one of your students and wants to work on this. Can we hire him? So that invariably works. It's a great way to hire people to be detailed. So.
Yeah, I would totally second that. I don't know that I've ever hired anyone from a docket advertisement. I mean, it's generally been out of my class or out of the clinic dean's fellows. You know, it's that sort of, you might not see for certain professors advertising. That's another thing to know too. I don't think I've advertised in the last 3 years. I think I advertised my first couple of years. But then you sort of get this cycle, you know, you get this sort of pipeline going. So I would totally second that approach. You know you want to work on trademark issues. And Professor Farley, you know, I would just email, are you looking for any fellows or something? I would do that. Yeah.
Sure. And that's the same kind of, going back to the job search stuff, both for internships, externships, and later in life, that's the way you find stuff for the most part. I think, first, you target where you want to be, and then you start networking to find out somebody who knows somebody who can send them there and help get you, where you want to go. And most places appreciate more someone who really kind of shows up at the doorstep and says, I just want to talk to you about your job, this is where I want to ship my money to them. I find doors opening a lot easier than looking in the Federal Register or wherever you do for the next FTC job. Even in very bureaucratic places, there's spaces for people who seem like that's where they want to be.
Use your faculty too. I find the students don't use the faculty, and they apply sort of to blind postings on a website or a government agency listing, and they say, I never heard anything. And if you had the faculty member mail your resume for you, who knew someone who worked there, you might actually hear something. So I think you just shouldn't be afraid of that. That's what we're here for. We're here for those discussions, and then that helps. So don't be afraid of that. Because I always think that the students don't use the faculty as much for this kind of networking. Because we've been around this town for a while. We know people in this place.
Most of you will be here during the summer.
Anything else? I don't know what happens. This is the patent law course, perhaps, is going along. But does anyone have specific patent questions that they would want to ask tonight?
I can represent patent law.
Does Sean can answer them, or I can give you Professor Sarnoff's email address and you can send them, about the
good address.
The patent law course itself.
Sorry, everyone. I was told by some people who I guess are working already or who are 3 on that, if you're already going to do internships or externships within the patent field, that a lot of times these courses aren't necessarily necessary because you're already learning it hands-on in the field. So what would you
That was
in
patent law
specifically?
It was Gina.
Oh, Gina Blasi. Yeah. So she said what? She's basically, she was like, you should
work experience.
What'd she say?
Work experience.
This is our IT society president, right?
Instead of
Well, she's been patent prosecuting. So maybe not, if you're going to do, if you're going to spend X hours a week doing patent prosecution, maybe you don't want to concurrently take a course on, that's what I was saying sort of earlier about the patent practical courses.
Oh, it depends on. Okay. So
IP management, patent prosecution.
If you really wanted to do patent law, if you wanted to be a patent attorney, I would not avoid the intro patent course.
Exactly. I would say practice does not supplant any of those.
You want to do patent prosecution, can you work doing patent prosecution instead of taking a patent prosecution course? Fine. I think that's totally fine. But if you know you want to do patent law, I would at least take the intro patent course. The other thing I haven't heard.
I'm sure, knowing Gina as I know her, and I know her intimately from clinic, she would not have included the foundation courses, the sort of theoretical courses in that statement. But I'm going to talk to her about it.
The other type of course, I don't know if we really targeted, but I think it would be valuable to keep on your agenda to maybe take at least one of the kind of international comparative courses. And again, it doesn't, now if you know you want to do only patents and you don't really care about anything, maybe take a patent one if you're experimenting. And so, for instance, you were taking, you know, you wanted to do copyright course and the patent course, you didn't get a chance to take trademark, but maybe you could take the international comparative trademark. And you don't need, most of these courses don't require you to take the basic one in order to, they just want you to be familiar with the concepts.
So there's such different things that are taught in those courses. They're not substitutes for each other. Just because of the spring ball thing working out better. Just what you learn is so different.
But I try to fit some kind of international one into that, because all IP now is getting more and more international. So getting a sense for at least how one of the topics works on the international sphere, I think will help you translate it if you find yourself doing one of the other topics in the international sphere.
Okay, if anyone has a patent question, look up Professor Sarnoff, Jay Sarnoff at WCL.America.edu, and I'm sure he'd be happy to meet with you individually about his patent or patent course.
And we at CISIP include kind of advising within our mandate, so if you're looking for other questions and you want directions, CISIP.org is our website, all our contact information is there, including the professor contact also.
CISIP is
CISIP.
CISIP. CISIP.
On your
Thank you, guys. Thank you.